It's Lake Effect on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. The Civil War, which started 150 years ago, was the bloodiest war ever fought on American soil. But unlike many conflicts today, battles were not always a daily occurrence. In fact, often days or weeks went by when soldiers were mainly moving from place to place or encamped and simply waiting for the next orders. And in those in-between periods, many soldiers kept themselves occupied with what was then an up-and-coming sport, baseball. The Civil War and immediate post-Civil War periods were pivotal for what became the national pastime. It's that era that will be the subject of a talk, and then a game, at the Kenosha Civil War Museum tomorrow. Gary Handlebar Hetzel is the founder of the Milwaukee Cream City's vintage baseball team. Bill Pop House founded the Delton Baseball Club. They'll both be talking and taking the field at the Civil War Museum. House tells Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke that there's much about baseball in that era that modern fans would recognize.
Well, there were leagues. Maybe they might have been professional. If they were, it was a little bit under the table. But there were players that were still playing in the major cities out east during the Civil War.
It was mostly an East Coast game.
Big time.
And there was a sort of a faction in New York and a faction in Massachusetts that didn't always agree on the rules and things. So prior to the Civil War, you had baseball being played in Milwaukee. The first game was in December of 1859. By Rufus King, who was later then a general in the Union Army. The onset of the Civil War actually helped spread the game.
Was baseball a grassroots enough level sport that it was the kind of game that soldiers with some downtime would play to pass the time?
It was one of the many activities that they would do during their downtime. As the war became more lengthier and lengthier, more soldiers started playing it in camp. Like Handlebar said, there were these two different games in the New York area and in the Massachusetts area, and those soldiers had a tendency to play their own type of game before the New York game kind of overtook.
Well, I was going to ask, did the Civil War play a role in maybe consolidating the rules of baseball a little bit?
I would say a little bit.
Yeah, it probably did. There's documentation of a number of different games that took place during the Civil War on the battlefield in between battles. There's even accounts of the Confederate soldiers watching from across the river as the Union soldiers were playing. They played it in the prison camps. And that's where it's, again, spread to especially some of the Southern soldiers. From it, I think the New York rules, as they were, more or less won out as they progressed.
How recognizable would a game in that era, say 1862, be to someone who grows up a baseball fan today?
Basically, your field outlay is the same. Four bases, 90-foot bases. The pitcher spot, it wasn't a mound at that time, was closer. That was 65 feet. Your same number of players. You had your pitcher and your catcher, tenders on the bases, and a short scout. Then you had three scouts in the outfield. And pretty much those players, I think a big difference to today when you see players shifting for certain, they're not going to have the Prince Fielder shift. The tenders had to stay a foot length away from the bag. And the outfielders, the scouts, had to play straight up. The only player who could really move around was a short scout, and he can literally go anywhere on the field.
He was like a rover. Okay. But if a person would go back in the time during the Civil War and witness a game, it'd be the field, the number of players, three outs per inning, three swings, and you're out.
There were no balls or strikes called.
No, nothing like
but
that.
Three swinging strikes where you don't foul it at all is a strikeout. Big difference would be there were no gloves. And so during that time, if you got the ball on one bound, it was an out.
Which is a big deal when that also is the case for the catcher. A foul tip that goes off the ground, there's no three strikes, it's just an out.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the qualities that makes the vintage game so unique is that there are a lot of outs from behind home plate. Mm-hmm. And that therefore the what we call the behind, which nowadays is the catcher, it's a very important position on the defensive field.
And another interesting fact for a lot of fans would be the umpire. There's a single umpire who stands by the batter and the behind, and he's just there to sort of make sure the game keeps going. If there's a close play at a base, the umpire will not make a call. It's up to the two gentlemen to make a call.
There are air quotes going on the other side of the studio.
And if they can't decide, yes, I'm out, safe. Then they'll appeal to the umpire. And since the umpire is watching all kinds of things, if he didn't see it, he can actually appeal to the crowd, and he'll ask them, you know. And so usually being a home field for a certain ball club is very advantageous in that situation.
But well, on paper, the ballists, as they were called back then, were bound to the honor code of being a gentleman, but it always didn't work out that way.
Well, I was going to say that there was an honor code, but you used the air quotes to describe gentlemen. This was not always a gentle game.
Not at all, especially during the Civil War, you know, when you had rival regiments taking on each other. No such thing as a gentleman in those Civil War camps.
And even in when baseball first started up, say, in Milwaukee, it was Rufus King, who was the editor of the Milwaukee Sentinel at the time, and it wasn't a kid's game. It was a gentleman's game. And so you would have that respect, but at the same time, people are people and they're competitive.
Well, right. These were sporting clubs the way, I guess, like English football, they're technically clubs.
Correct.
And people are members of the club.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And they could be members of the club and not play a minute on the diamond. They were more like gentlemen clubs back then. And some of these clubs had different amount of teams.
Yes.
And the team that would be on the field representing them would be like their all-star players.
And the clubs, especially on the East Coast, when they first started, they played right there and they played locally. Nobody traveled. It was right before the Civil War that a couple clubs, the Philadelphia Club and New York Knickerbockers, started to move around a little bit. That all came after the Civil War.
Well, right. I was going to ask, how important was the end of the war in the ability both for teams to travel but also for new teams and new leagues to sprout up?
I think there's a good evidence of that at the Baseball Hall of Fame. This kind of hit close to my heart. My wife and I were there during the time that Robin Yount was inducted. And the oldest uniform artifacts in the Hall of Fame is a hat and a jersey from Baraboo, Wisconsin, from the 1866 team. And my parents were born and raised in Baraboo, so that's got an emotional tie very close to my heart. But I saw that jersey and I thought, well, these men came back from the Civil War and started this team and started playing that way, whereas mm-hmm. before the war, it was pretty much confined to the larger cities.
How much is known about the earliest Wisconsin baseball clubs?
Not a whole lot. we know the first game was in 1859. That was in December. And why they played in December, I don't know. But to honor that, our club plays the first weekend of every December. And we have a little fun. And
the wool uniforms are helpful.
Very helpful
at that time
of year,
yes.
And then in April of 1860, Rufus King started the first Milwaukee Baseball Club. And that stayed in operation up until the Civil War. And if you look at the numbers, there was a National Association prior to the Civil War, and there were originally 16 East Coast teams in 1857. 1867, 10 years later, after the Civil War, that grew to 275 teams from across the country.
And at that point, Wisconsin's teams, the Cream Cities, for example, become part of a broader national league.
Absolutely.
Right. Right.
How much do we know about you're saying before we started this that your team, the Delton team, is based on a real semi-pro team? How many of those records survive?
None. My grandfather was a pretty modest man. He never said anything about the Delton Club at all when I was growing up. And we didn't really discover that they existed until my grandmother died in 1987 at the age of 100. And when we were cleaning out her effects, here are these two pictures of them in their uniforms and them in their street clothes. And that's all we really know about them.
But the imagination takes off from there.
Exactly. I asked my dad the age that Pop might have been at that time. We were guessing around 1909.
Let me ask you both this, because there are plenty of adult baseball leagues in southeastern Wisconsin and obviously plenty of rec softball leagues out there. What is it about the vintage game that appeals to each of you that makes you want to play in that way rather than using 2011 rules?
Number one for me is I'm not very good.
Ditto.
And actually the rules back then and the whole makeup of the game, I think, is an equalizer. And I've played softball, you know, on rec clubs and that. And that was fun, but I think you do see more of the competitiveness and things like that. Our club, we started off with 3-4 games a year. Now we're up to 25 a year. We travel the Midwest. We have a festival that brings people in from Missouri, Cincinnati, Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota. It's more of a camaraderie, I would guess. And there is the gentleman aspect. And yes, we'd like to win, but we enjoy the game itself. And as a teacher, I also do presentations for schools and that on the history of baseball. And when we're playing, that's really what it is. We're there to have a baseball game, but to also educate and entertain people as to the origins of baseball.
Well, for me, I've always been sort of a history buff. And I remember getting my first baseball book when I was 9 years old. And, of course, there were stories in there about Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb and Christy Mathewson and Hannes Wagner and those guys. And for some reason, I was just naturally drawn to the way the uniforms looked, the way the people were dressed in the stands, the men and the women in their finest clothes.
A lot of dark suits.
A lot of dark suits. A lot of fedoras. And for some reason, that just kind of grabbed me, even back then, and it stayed with me all these years. So then when the Cream Cities came to their first Civil War reenactment, when I was a Civil War reenactor in 04, it was just a natural fit for me. And I remember coming up the bat as a pinch hitter late in the game and getting a hit in my first at-bat. After that, I was hooked. After that, I got all the equipment for Christmas and started playing right then and there.
Do you feel like a visceral connection between what you're doing and the beginnings of this sport?
Oh, sure.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
That's part of the appeal of playing the vintage game. And like Handlebar was saying, the camaraderie you build amongst the players, you all have a common bond, and that's what keeps everything going.
Well, thank you so much to both of you, and best of luck this weekend and for the rest of the season.
Thank you, Mitch. Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it.
Bill Pop House is the founder of the Delton Baseball Club, and Gary Handlebar Hetzel founded the Milwaukee Cream Cities. They're both vintage baseball teams, which play according to 19th century rules. House and Hetzel will talk and play some vintage baseball tomorrow afternoon at the Kenosha Civil War Museum. They spoke with Mitch Tyke. We'll have one more short break, and then we'll be back in our performance studio with some Gypsy Noir. It's folk, it's jazz, it's classical, it's Milwaukee's own The Vitrolum Republic, next. It's Lake Effect on WUWM.